When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Alright, welcome to the 20th episode of the What If Football 2022 World Cup Daily Podcast. Hi, I'm Jake from What If Football, and here I've got the penultimate fixtures to talk you through of the last 16. We've got first Brazil versus South Korea, and then we have got Japan and Croatia and heartbreaking penalties. We've got it all. We've got a great Brazilian team. We've got a turgid South Korean defence. And we've got previews to the final day of the last 16, all contained within. Let us get stuck right into it, shall we? As you may know by now, we are not just here with the World Cup Daily Podcast here on What If Football. Oh no, yes, we are here on the Sports Social Podcast Network, anywhere where you get your podcasts, and on YouTube with this daily podcast. But we're also daily over there on our Patreon page, patreon.com/whatiffootball, from £1 this month to get the Great Games podcast every single day right up until the weekend of the final with Great Games from the annals of football in World Cup history. We've also got Football Manager International Challenges on YouTube, Alternate Football Universes as well, with our What If videos on YouTube as well as Predictors and Combined 11s going forward on YouTube Shorts. But for now, we are tackling Brazil, the Seleção, the five-time champions, the favourites, the all-time greatest World Cup team in history. And really, this was the time that they shone. They'd only scored three goals in the group stages, albeit with one game against Cameroon where they rested quite a lot of their team. But here they saw that three goals in the group stages and raised them four, all inside 36 minutes. And going into the game, Hwang Hee-chan was the obvious change for South Korea. Meanwhile, obviously, the big news around the Seleção was the return of Neymar. Neymar, not quite the poster boy and the one with the country's weight on his shoulders, as was the case in 2014 and potentially a bit too in 2018. But here, nonetheless, a star player is back, and the rest really was a reversion to the strongest available 11 that we last saw for Brazil against Switzerland in the second game, which was a late 1-0 win. And really, the first win that they chalked up against Serbia, that was somewhat of a late win as well, only breakthrough coming midway through the second half. And really, this was the inverse of that. Brazil, did they deliver the performance deserving of the favourites tag? You've got to say absolutely. Rafinha was finally showing the quality we all know that he has in assisting Vinicius Jr. for what was an absolute delicious goal. Now, obviously, there'll be plenty of people talking about the team goal for the third one, the beautiful assist for the fourth as well. but the way Vinicius Jr. just delicately curls it around, say, about five or six South Korean bodies. Now, I'm not going to say it was George Best versus, I think, Tottenham Hotspur-esque from 1963 or 4 or whatever, but it had that vibe, just a nonchalant curl beyond seven, maybe hapless opposition bodies into the top corner. It was stunning. Really, it does landmark Vinicius Jr.'s performances this World Cup. I've been Brazil's best player, in my opinion, anyway. And, of course, then Brazil go on to win a penalty through Richarlison, although I'm not quite sure what the South Korean defender could have done when Richarlison runs across him, but by the letter of the law, he's kicked him. It's a foul, it's a penalty. And Neymar very much backs against the wall for South Korea, and this reaffirmed it with a cool, calm and collected limping penalty from Neymar, nonchalant as ever. And Brazil, by the, I think it was the 12th minute mark here, game done and dusted, really. It was a different start to all the other Brazil games, and here they'd sum things up relatively early, and now we were going to see whether or not they could be as prolific as all the names on the bench promise, really. And I was more impressed with their transitional work, especially going backwards. Quite a lot of men tracking back, a lot of numbers getting back as well, which is something that you can sometimes label with superstar teams, that the men at the front don't often pull their weight, but Brazil certainly did in the first half. Here I felt Casemiro was absolutely excellent again. Yes, the match winner against Switzerland, but here he was phenomenal. He was an absolute brick wall out there on his own, although it was more of a double pivot, even with Lucas Paquetá in there as a more attacking option than Thread. It was more of a 4-2-3-1, maybe with the free roll Neymar as 4-2-4, but it wasn't quite the 4-1-5 levels that we saw against Serbia in the first match. And yes, of course, the brilliant team move for Richarlison's goal, assisted by Thiago Silva, pre-assisted by Marquinhos as well. It was absolutely effortless football. It was a bit more incisive than the Dutch team goal of 21 passes that we saw a couple of days ago, but still, two terrific team goals, well worthy of winning a World Cup knockout stage tie. The fourth goal was, in my opinion, even better. Just a really measured side-footed volley from a brilliant Vinicius Jr. assist as well. And it takes a lot, really, to keep that ball down, side-footed volley into the corner, again through opposition legs. And that was the goal that probably impressed me the most, alongside Vinicius Jr.'s there. Goal to break the deadlock. Composure as well from the West Ham man. It goes to show the level of the Premier League. If your central midfielder starter for Brazil is playing week in, week out for West Ham, really, doesn't it? No offence, West Ham fans. But there you are. And yes, whilst you can class the level of opponent Brazil had here, it's probably the most, at least the first half was, the second half was just a closing out exercise. The first half was probably the most complete performance, attacking-wise anyway, that we've seen from any team at this World Cup. The only niggle in my back of my mind was how many more they probably should have scored. Rafinha especially in that second half, maybe Richarlison too, who just didn't get on the end of things as much as what I think he probably ought to have done in comparison with earlier performance. And that's probably why I felt Casemiro was probably one of Brazil's better performers in this game that we had here tonight, a 4-1 win. South Korea, on the other hand, I would say it's probably one of the more atrocious defensive displays that we've seen. Now, we've lambasted quite a few teams for sitting back, sitting deep, playing for nil-nils and just being downright dour when there was no need to be. And praised teams like Saudi Arabia, who were aggressive in defence, aggressive in the press, the defensive line, springing off side traps and working to a T in a number of games. And South Korea, it was admirable the way they went about it. It pressing in a 4-4-2, very aggressive as well, going man-to-man at the back. But it just was not executed the right way. And yes, there is a way to play that against Brazil, I feel. But I feel as though Serbia and Switzerland, I felt they did things a little bit better by being defensive. Although, yeah, it's a different way to play against Brazil. South Korea going gung-ho for it, really. It was something to witness, and it was just calamitous on the transition. It was calamitous to see Brazil just with acres and acres of room in the final third. It was quite bewildering, really. There's ways to do that, and they never appeared to utilise the offside trap that perhaps they should have done in that scenario. And were just mainly all at sea for most of the goals. Brazil had built up such a huge advantage that they could let them play. South Korea attempted to play and then just got continually picked off again and again and again. And I don't think it's much of an exaggeration that had Brazil's finishing been a little bit better, it could have been almost record-breaking in terms of World Cup football, certainly in terms of knockout stages in the most recent past, of course, one of those being Brazil's own demise in 2014, the 7-1. You did have a couple of things for Alisson to do, I suppose. Hwang Hee-chan forced the Liverpool goal into a magnificent save from distance, and he did have some chances, the Wolves winger, when he was running down the left and then again in the second half on the right, but never fazed the Brazilian defence too much. He had Son Heung-min curling an effort, which Alisson did extremely well to save with his shoulder at the start of the second half, and another brilliant save from Alisson at a goal-mouth scramble. So the Liverpool goalie had enough to do, really, and he's finally breached by Son Heung-min, fantastic shot. I mean, this could be the goal of the night so far. It was fantastic the way he hit. It may have taken a deflection, but who cares? Like the Casemiro goal against Switzerland, who cares? It was such a wonderful hit. It's going in anyway, in my opinion. But in terms of South Korea going forward, I was just slightly disappointed with Kim Jin-soo. Sadly, ineffectual going down the left hand side at left back. Obviously, his propensity to go forward left his colleagues gaping at the back, really, to a Brazilian counter-attack, really. Man-to-man was probably not the best decision in the world for a defensive performance. It's probably, you've got to take this Brazil win with a little bit of pinch of salt because of that, I think. But still, I think attacking-wise, we're going to see Brazil tested a lot more, and I think they'll rise to the challenge in a number of cases. Now, the game against Croatia coming up, that will be more of a midfield battle and could be a little harder for Brazil. They could get a little bit outnumbered. They will play Croatia. They'll probably play more withdrawn forward, be it Bruno Petkovic. But I don't think it's too much for Brazil to worry about. But it will be a completely different challenge. Croatia will not go for the win immediately like South Korea did, and they won't panic. They've been a goal down and they've come through challenges like Canada, like Japan, obviously. Brazil is a completely different beast. But, admirable to an extent, but South Korea just did not execute their defensive plan against a team that you've got to say now out there as the favourites. You've got, of course, Argentina, which they seem to be destined for a semi-final, although the level, the quality, if the favourites win today, Spain and Portugal, the level of quarterfinals is going to be absolutely insane. It's going to be akin almost to a set of Champions League quarterfinals, really. You've got Netherlands Argentina, which in any tournament really sparks enormous memories of World Cups gone by, 1978's final. You've got 1998's quarterfinal with a Bergkamp goal, 2014 in the semi-final and a ripped anus and a penalty shootout to boot. And you got Brazil Croatia, two very, very, very good teams. England versus France, the first ever, I believe, first ever meeting between the two teams in knockout phases, but plenty of meetings down the years, 1982, 2004, 2012. And potentially an All-Iberian, which will be incredible, won't it? Obviously a repeat of Euro 2012 semi-final, 2010 World Cup's last 16. We are spoilt for choice. And perhaps probably the best set of quarterfinals we could have possibly got with the last 16s we were dealt. Probably the best set of quarterfinals since maybe 1998. Maybe chucking 2010. That was filled with drama as well, though, that one, really. Not so much on the elite teams level, but it is all to come forward and all to look forward to as we look forward to the next game, which is Japan versus Croatia, and a little bit of penalty heartbreak. Stick around with us. Welcome back, and now a story of heartbreak from the Al-Janoub Stadium, or at least I think it's the Al-Janoub Stadium. They all look fairly similar outside of the Khalifa International Stadium, of course, so, i.e. all seven newly built stadiums for this competition. Anyway, let's get stuck into Qatar 1, or Japan 1, rather, Croatia 1. And team news coming out of the game was Ritsu Doan starts from the off this time. Meanwhile, Taniguchi and Tomiyasu is in the back line, more of a 3-4-3 hybrid 4-3-3, depending on where Tomiyasu would take up positions, of course, on the same sort of patch of land, same half space, same channel as Junya Ito. He's very exciting, very front-footed wing-back as well. In terms of Croatia's lineup, Barisic was in for Sosa, Petkovic was subbed in to the front line as well. Many questions were asked. Could Croatia handle the Japanese press? Were Croatia finally tired? And could Japan spring what would be another surprise? Well, Croatia, they were harassed from the off. Livakovic, who would, of course, become the hero of the piece for the Europeans, he was harassed right from the start by Daisa Maeda. A great start by Japan, a great first half, fully deserving of that 1-0 lead going into the halftime break. Croatia, they were very happy to have a feel for the ball, as you would expect. We did preview that high possession was to be their game, as we mentioned yesterday. And when you've got a midfield of Marcelo Brozovic, of Mateo Kovacic, of Luka Modric, a high possession game, controlling that midfield was always going to be the sort of blueprint from Croatia. They were quick to attempt to win the ball back too. Everyone was involved in the counter press. Did lead to Ivan Perisic robbing Takehiro Tomiyasu in the final third before forcing a save. That was Croatia's probably their best chance up until Perisic found the net in the second half. They did attempt to attack Japan. Attack is the best form of defence with his high possession football. Press resistant, I felt Mateo Kovacic hasn't put a foot wrong in this entire tournament, really. Marcelo Brozovic as well was fairly decent in the build-up. Really, though, Croatia looked better when they were a bit more direct. When they were a bit slow and sluggish. To be fair, they did look a little bit tired, a bit lethargic in and around the middle third. Petkovic couldn't put his chance away, and I think he's becoming a little bit like Croatia's Haris Seferovic for me. Really unremarkable, unspectacular number nine who isn't really good at too great at putting chances away, and it shows here. And it's epitomised Croatia in this game. Lethargic, bumbling. Their breakthrough came from a cross, so the longer balls were the threat for Croatia. And when you get into extra time, it's the long throws where they were most dangerous from, if they were dangerous in extra time, really. And a great header from Ivan Perisic is now Croatia's top tournament scorer. He scored in every tournament he's played in. Either way, he's gone ahead of Davor Suka. And to be fair, Croatia, they did grow into the second half. Luka Modric had a pretty decent volley, but there were no real clear chances for this game to be won within 90 minutes. And probably the fairer result, despite Japan having probably edged the game across the 90 minutes, the fair result really was a draw. There wasn't too much in it. I think by the end of the 90 minutes, by the end of extra time, really, in fairness, Croatia's experience saw them embrace the tense affair of knockout stage tournament football, what this is. A bit more than Japan, who were a bit more inexperienced at this level. Of course, they were in the collapse in the last 16 4 years ago against Belgium. They've got previous in terms of the last 16, losing to Turkey 1-0 in 2002, losing to Paraguay in 2010 on penalties. So this was fourth time in the knockout stages, and unfortunately fourth match, fourth defeat for the Samurai Blue. And Japan, they were fluid as ever. We've seen them in multiple guises this tournament: 3-4-3, 3-5-2, 4-3-3, 4-2-3-1, whichever way you want to dice it, really. They've been very fluid. And like I mentioned, Tomiyasu in that right centre half, right back role, he's tended to play more left centre half for Japan, but I don't think he's played that position once in this tournament, which just goes to show how interchangeable Japan are, really. And the build up was fairly interchangeable as well. It's quite mixed. They did prefer the long ball to bypass the incredible Croatian midfield, of course. But I think they did look better when they could attack at speed through the opposition, which is something bizarrely that Croatia couldn't do. They were a bit more side to side, a bit slower tempo. And we know from this tournament so far how good Japan have been when they are direct, when they play it on the ground and nip dangerous moves together. They've been one of my favourite teams to watch, if not the favourite, because even England, you get that angst of watching you, wanting to, your home nation to win. There's none of that, obviously, with me in Japan, and I can just sit back and enjoy it. If they lose, they lose, and if they win, obviously, celebration, because they've performed fantastically. And again, another admirable performance here. This is obviously Japan's fourth last 16 match, their second elimination at the hands of penalties, unfortunately. You had the likes of Junya Ito, who's been absolutely incredible all tournament. His crossing into Daisen Maeda was spot on. Maeda was inches away from tapping in. He missed a header as well moments later. And Japan really were finding joy in behind the fullbacks of Borisic and Juranovic. Ito was winning the battle with Barisic on the right every single time he got forward. Daichi Kamada as well was running things. Really, another showcase why he was preferred to Kumi Minamino. I thought, I've been really disappointed with Minamino. Of course, he's had mainly cameo appearances from the bench, really. But Daichi Kamada has been absolutely fantastic. He's been fantastic for the past 2-3 years in the Bundesliga with Eintracht Frankfurt. And he's more than deserved his place in the starting 11, and again, another fantastic game. Perhaps one of the match, maybe, but you've got alongside him with Taru Endo as well, who was an absolute brick wall in that midfield. Again, another performance that will go under the radar for the Japanese, but again, another performance where you think, wow, what a player. And a lot of these Japanese players, they've got a lot of top-level European League experience, and Japanese football is only going from strength to strength, really. A lot of them, of course, play their trade in the Bundesliga. You've got Mitoma, who plays for Brighton as well, Tomiyasu at Arsenal, and really, by the end of the first half, they were in charge, fully in charge. Daisen Maeda deserving the goal when it fell to him from the knockdown of a cross, and extra time, really, went like most extra time periods do. It's headlined by substitute, stops in play, cramp, etc. Substitutions of Mateo Kovacic and Luka Modric, which appeared baffling, really. But unfortunately for Croatia, they didn't have the undesired effect of penalty shootout misses when there. You'd expect them, with the experiences they had from 2018 of beating Denmark, of beating Russia on penalty shootouts, you'd have expected them to be number one, number two, in line to take a spot kick, but they weren't. They were substituted, really. On the other side of things, Mitoma was probably the only excitement on the pitch from extra time. That and Croatia's dangerous long throws, which we mentioned earlier on. And really, it was the experience of the Europeans that showed in the shootout. Livakovic, the hero, saving not one, not two, but three penalties. Yes, they were tame, and you can lambast him penalties all you like, but if the goalkeeper dives the wrong way, they look cool, calm and collected, unlike the penalty that Croatia missed, which was cool, calm, collected, and it struck the outside of the post. And a pretty poor set of penalties. Yeah, it is probably a poor set of penalties when you consider the languid run-ups from all those in Japanese, as opposed to the determined, steeled determination of the Croatians, who just fired them in, except for the obvious one, who had a stuttering run-up. And Croatia won 3-1. It's somewhat of a travesty, really. I really felt as though Japan, the neutrals' favourites, the one that everybody wanted to see a little bit more of. It would have been lovely to see an Asian nation go into the quarterfinals through this Japan-Croatia fixture. I'm recording this before Brazil and South Korea, so that's why I've mentioned that. If South Korea have gone and beaten Brazil, it seems unlikely now as I record at 6 p.m, but you never know. And there's all them matches gone. We have got just two more last 16s to go, and after tomorrow's episode, we get a little bit of a break. We've got two rest days, but we will not be resting, of course. We've got the World Cup Rewind podcast for you, where we're going to charter every single World Cup tournament from start to finish, from 1930. Oh yes, from 1930. But before then, we've got to preview tomorrow's games, and obviously tomorrow deliver those games for you in their review. And we've got Morocco versus Spain. We have got Portugal versus Switzerland to close out the last 16. Stick around. Welcome back. Spain versus Morocco is next. And Spain and, well, both teams go into this with completely divergent moods, really. Spain still reeling from that Japan defeat, which they were handed, unlike the likes of France, Portugal, Brazil. They were handed that defeat with pretty much a full-strength squad, which is incredible, really. Morocco on a high, one of the best performing teams in the group stages alongside the Netherlands and England in terms of getting 7 points. They're only one of three teams to get 7 points in the group stages, which is crazy, really. It just shows the competitiveness of this World Cup so far. Morocco, their last knockout stage appearance came after winning a group as well. It was a 1986 World Cup. They got creditable 0-0 draws against Poland, against England, and beat Portugal, and then got taken to the 88th minute where Lothar Matthäus broke their hearts. They'll be hoping for something similar, but with a happier ending today. At Spain, they have not won a World Cup knockout game since winning the thing in 2010, although, of course, they do have that European Championship semi-final run. But that is the only campaign last year where Spain have won a knockout stage game since 2012. So you've got 2016, they lose in the last 16 to Italy, of course, last 16 in Russia, against Russia in 2018. And here we are, Morocco, very, very stern test. And again, you get the feeling that it will be another type of Japan-Croatia game. Spain love possession. Morocco are happy to cede possession. And Morocco won't mind that. They've got an incredible number six in Sofyan Amrabat, who will have to be at his absolute best. They've got an incredible set of inside forwards, Sofyan Boufal, Hakim Ziyech, who we all know about, who will be the catalyst for the counter-attack. And you've got Youssef En-Nesyri, who's bubbling up to some nice form, obviously plays his football in Spain as well. He's been blowing hot and cold for Sevilla all season. It looks like he's come to the fore in the past couple of games. The only Moroccan to score in successive World Cup games, so maybe he can make that 3-for-3 in this game. And this is one of those where if Spain do lose and they do get knocked out, Morocco should be on similar lines, really, to Japan in terms of how they're revered. We've all loved watching Japan and how they've shocked teams. Morocco should firmly be in that. And again, another shining light for African football. They're the only African nation left in the tournament, so why not go fly the flag with a potential quarterfinal against maybe Portugal, who they beat in 1986. But of course, Portugal play Switzerland, and Switzerland have, if we're going to be fair, they've looked a great deal better in front of goal under Murat Yakin as they had under Vladimir Petkovic. That is absolutely certain. Braylon Bowler looks absolutely ready to blossom on this world stage. Switzerland, of course, they've got the advantage of the psychological advantage, I guess, of having beaten Portugal earlier on this year in the Nations League. But we did see that really the Nations League doesn't really count for much, since Denmark beat France home and away, didn't they? And that didn't really turn out too well for the Danes as they went home with one of the worst group stage records. And of course, England relegated. Well, they're statistically the best team at this World Cup so far, aren't they? So there you go. Portugal, a win here would be, for the first time, would be since 2006, where they've won three World Cup games, which is quite shocking, really. After, of course, 2010's last 16 exit, 2014's group stage exit, and another last 16 exit at the hands of Uruguay in 2018. Portugal, well, based on the names alone, based on the experience of said names from Cristiano Ronaldo, of course, Bruno Fernandes, Bernardo Silva, you can reel them off list by list if you want. They're certainly favourites, but they have had their stickier moments. And Switzerland were really one goal away from topping their group and not even being in this contest. They were a goal away from playing South Korea last night, or rather tonight as I record. But in terms of Portugal, they're coming off the back of a South Korea defeat, obviously. But their full-strength team will be back. We'll see if that can hinder momentum, or will it help momentum, give the players a little bit of a rest, as it seemed to have done for France. And that is all we've got time for on today's show. We've got two enormous fixtures, two very tantalising fixtures when you think of how good Switzerland have been going forward and you think of how great Morocco have been in defence, really. Regragui, Moroccan manager, has only seen one goal scored against his Moroccan team, so we could see a bit of an obdurate Spanish performance. For a team who struggle when Alvaro Morata's not up top, it will mean a lot for Spain and their chances going forward if Luis Enrique reverts to Morata as the nine, which he did in the first half against Japan, but then moved away. And of course, Cristiano Ronaldo, well, He is obviously the one to watch as ever, but 70% of people polled by a newspaper in Portugal don't want him to start, so perhaps this is the beginning of the end of Cristiano Ronaldo as he looks set to ink terms, as they say, with a Saudi Arabian outfit. And that really, this is the last World Cup of this era, really. Not only 32 teams, but Messi seems as though he's going to Inter Miami. Cristiano Ronaldo looks like he's off to Al Nassr. So you've got the two greatest of the last generation. They're on their way out. They're leaving European football goodbye. And meanwhile, we've got one of the young boys, Kylian Mbappe, racing to a golden boot. Hopefully he won't score on Saturday and he'll be collecting the golden boot. Yeah, he can do that with five goals. And England will just have to spread the goals out a bit in order to win the World Cup for that to happen. Regardless, we've got a long way. A lot of water needs to go under that World Cup bridge before we can be discussing anything like that. And until then, until tomorrow, thank you very much for listening, watching if you do over there on YouTube as well. And until then, Sithi, up the Three Lions.
Podcast Network.